Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It is official, all right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It's cold.
Advantage of my shit. They took a mile, I gave an inch. I elevated, I am him. I got no reservations, but decisions I made for my own sake. I'm protecting like a home safe. I've been running, running, trying to make it happen off the hamster wheel. I'm in my own race.
My next guest once said, quote, "I feel like the expressionistic part of music, like how you say the craziest thoughts, feelings, and emotions inside of you, put it all over instruments, put it out, and then you find there are people that are feeling exactly the same way you do," end quote. And I do actually believe this is the perfect mindset to have when approaching art. His latest album is called Long Time No See. He's Khan, and I want to welcome him to Library Rap, the Hip Hop Interviews with Tim Ioncal. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
So, you know, I was obviously listening to a bunch of your music prior to this and, you know, reading as much as I could. And I think what's amazing about your music is that you consciously attempt to talk about as many topics as you can. And you also
100%.
Rhyme over a bunch of different music samples or whatever as you can. And it comes off very heartfelt. So I was actually surprised when you kind of, I think I was like listening to an interview you did, and you talked about how you don't really think about the lyrics or the emotion over the lyrics. They just kind of come out very authentic to you. So that being said, sorry, it's a very long way of asking. What were you listening to as a kid that kind of helped shape your mindset in terms of how you approach your art?
To be honest, I was listening to everything, but to be more specific in terms of like rap albums that kind of like, when I was a kid, that made me really just get extremely interested and obsessed with just the art form of rap and hip hop and the whole culture. Like All Eyes on Me by Tupac, Eazy-E's first album, Ready to Die by Biggie Smalls, you know, like just the classic albums, you know, Jay's first album, Nas's first album. Like it's just a lot of classic albums because at the time I wasn't, I was young. The internet wasn't as, it was a big thing, but it wasn't as big. It was still MySpace
right.
when I was a kid.
Nice.
So yeah, so it was still a lot of the older, I guess you want to say golden era styles that were still very popular back then.
Nice. I know you didn't mention them, but we talked about your first album, you talked about, you also, grew up listening to Big Pun, Big L, and OC.
Yeah, absolutely. Like all the golden era stuff, all of it. It was all consumed at like a really high volume on my end. Just because, like I said, back then it wasn't. There was guys doing mainstream stuff. Like you had Ludacris, and you had like, you know, that kind of shit. When like the South was coming up, and they were doing really mainstream records, but it wasn't. I didn't know anybody listening to a ton of melodic rap. It wasn't a whole lot of the stuff that's going on now. Mm-hmm. It was really just like a lot of the golden era stuff was really what we were listening to.
I want to ask you about OC because, you know, I've had him on the podcast, and, you know, prior to interviewing OC, I interviewed Buck Wild, and you kind of asked him a bunch of stuff about OC, and, you know, the common conversation or the common words that were used to describe OC was like, he's a genius. When you were listening to OC as a kid, was that something that crossed your mind and then you kind of more appreciate it as you get older, or kind of did you see that the geniusness behind OC right away?
I think the only person, OC's amazing, but I think the only person I really saw the genius in and got it was Tupac.
Mm, yeah.
Because of just the way the lyrics were delivered and they were written. I got that. Everyone else, it just sounded super cool to me. It just sounded like, really, this is dope. I really like this. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, it's perfect. It's like the reason I start this podcast is because, you know, as a kid, you're hearing all these, you know, artists growing up and you know they're important, but you don't really know why, but you're obviously not gravitating because you're seeing the nuances a lot of what they're doing, right?
Yeah, at 12 years old, you have no idea what a lot of these guys are even talking about.
Right.
You know what I mean? When I'm listening to Capital Punishment at 11, you know, I have no idea what he's talking about. It just sounds cool.
Right.
It just sounds good.
Right. There was this rock, when I was a kid, there was this rock song that the lyric is, "I went to a party on a Saturday Night Live. I didn't get laid. I got in a fight." And as an 11-year-old, I thought she was like crazy cool progressive because she was talking about getting laid off of work.
Right, nah, like,
that's
nah, nah.
Awesome. She didn't get laid off of work that day. That's
she was not referring to work.
Exactly. I realized that earlier, and then I also realized why my mom got mad at me when I said the lyric.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, when you're a kid, you definitely want to hide that stuff from your parents, unless your parents are cool with it. Mine weren't.
I talk about it. Speaking of you as a kid, you talked about interviews how you feel like there's a lot of introspective, artistic kids out there, and that they have these talents that. And insecurities that they're able to bring out through their music. Were you that type of kid as a kid? I mean, how did you find this art form to be the one to kind of push your talents to the roof?
I definitely was. I was more of definitely an introspective kid. Definitely shy, very laid back, you know, not very talkative. I started with drawing, you know, it was like just drawing pictures. I didn't start rapping until I was like around 21, 22. I used to freestyle a lot, but I never recorded or I didn't write a rap until I was almost 21.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What made you decide to, I guess, start writing, put, you know, pen to paper and get into?
At that point, I started listening to like Wiz Khalifa and Currency and Mac Miller and Big Crit a lot. Those guys, they were really big at the time. And I just wanted to try something because it was just the monotony of like going to work, getting up, going to work, you know, going to community college and just switching up the monotony of that. I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, looking back, I definitely needed something to kind of break up the boring routine that I had.
You know, in your art, in your lyrics, you refer a lot, I think, to you do something clever in your lyrics where you don't necessarily talk about the power of the pen, but you say lyrics that show you the power of the pen. I don't know if that makes sense.
Right, no, I'm following.
And I think on the track Real, which, you know, you dropped a few years ago, and hopefully I don't screw up your lyrics, but you know, you said the power I possess is in my pen is unequivocally the sentences I formulate inspire my misery. Literally terrified when I die, no one will remember me. The only thought I have is inside me is leave a legacy. And, you know, you wrote that in your 20s, and that just says a lot about where you, I think, where you were, but also how powerful you can be with your lyrics. Can you just take me back to when you wrote that song and kind of what was going on that made you kind of put that to paper?
I wrote so many that at this point, I can't remember specifically what that was. I just remember back then constantly feeling like I didn't have an outlet. I didn't have a voice, that I wasn't being heard. You know what I mean? I was working dead end jobs, or, you know, just doing a lot of stuff that, you know, a lot of people in their early 20s, I feel like, do. You know what I mean? You feel like you need to, you know, try and get money, and you want to try to get established, and you try out school, and you do all these different avenues, and none of that stuff was working for me. It wasn't helping me to feel fulfilled or helping me feel like I had a purpose. And I think once I found rap, and I was, you know, you start rapping at 20, 21, 22, that's pretty late in the game. So it was kind of like at that time when I first started, it was just like me getting all these emotions and thoughts out that I had never said to anyone, you know, stuff that I kept bottled up. So it was just like there was a sense of urgency to like, I need to get all this stuff out. I need to do this at a high volume, at a fast pace, and just attempt to be heard.
And you obviously, you know, has a discography to show for it, but also you have a list of producers that you've worked with or even have had sessions with that. And I want to ask you about the Dr. Dre session, because what's fascinating to me is that I can't write rhyme for it to save my life. But you've had these like amazing, you talked about having this session with Dr. Dre and how you guys did stuff together, but stuff wouldn't be released. So for you, what was the big lesson taken away having these sessions with Dr. Dre, and kind of what have you taken away from those sessions to use for your studio, your future studio sessions, and even on this new album?
What I learned was just a different way of recording. You know what I mean? I was exposed to different styles of recording that I had never been exposed to, and I saw different kind of tricks, you know what I mean, when it comes to recording, so to speak. That was about it. Mostly it was just an affirmation kind of experience for me, you know what I mean, to just continue to let me know that it's one of those things where you have moments along the way, whatever path you're on, I feel like, where you get an affirmation. It's like you are doing the right thing, you know. That's mostly what I took away from it. It wasn't outside of just a technical aspect of recording and a new way to write songs. That was about it. Mostly it was just an affirmation.
I want to ask you about Ari the Rugged Man, because I know I also get your Twitter's handle, and Ari tweeted out about how you sent him a beat and now he has to get on it.
Yeah.
What was it about for you, for Ari, that you wanted to kind of collab with him on a song together?
I want to say I dropped him in an interview and maybe he saw it. And, you know, I said his name in an interview one time and he saw it, but he had reached out to me a little bit like 2 years ago to do something. And we just, you know, the timing was never right. And I finally had something that I felt good about. So I sent it to him. Hopefully he sends the verse back. I haven't gotten it back yet, but hopefully I get that verse.
That's dope. You know, it's also impressive, I think, about you is that you aren't afraid to change your flow and your pace in your music. You know, you go to slow pace, you go to fast pace, and you mix it up in between. Is that something that you've always had in you, or is that something that you've kind of started to develop as you've gotten more comfortable with your craft?
It's something I always wanted to do, but it's something that definitely I didn't start trying or, you know, attempting to do until I was, you know, more seasoned with the craft. You know, early on, it was like just fast, super fast raps because I had a lot of thoughts and emotions and feelings I was trying to get out, and I was trying to say a million things at the same time, you know what I mean? But the older I've gotten and the longer I've done this, you know, I don't just listen to rap. So, you know, it's logical to think that, you know, if you're not just listening to rap all day, you know, you're going to try other stuff.
Emphasis back on my effort. Ever since I could remember, set a goal, knock it down, watch it fall, yell at timber. I took chances at the church, they took advantage of my shit. They took a mile, I gave a ninja.
I'm going to turn to the new album, Long Time No See. The opening track, you know, as a lot of the lyrics, but this has some, you know, powerful lyrics. And one that kind of stood out was the quote when you say, break out of the box that they put me in constantly, and just that line. You know, what is it about a metaphorical box that people have? Do you feel that people have this need to put artists into a box? I mean, why do you think, yeah, what is it for their comfort level that has to be like, all right, we got to put Khan in a certain box before we can do anything?
I don't think it's like a conscious decision people make. I think it's just a taste thing. You know, they really enjoy one certain style and one thing from you, and they want that over and over again. But, you know, there's no longevity in doing the same thing over and over again from a business standpoint. And then from an artistic standpoint, you know, you grow. You know, I'm not 21, 22 trying to find myself anymore. You know, I'm 30 years old. You know, I have a good idea of who I am and what I want to do and the direction I'm going in life.
The track Hard to Tell, could you kind of... can you just take me into like the creative process behind this track and kind of how that the studio session happened, but also what's the significance of that particular title for you?
We called it Hard to Tell because initially we used the same sample Nas used, on It Ain't Hard to Tell, so that was just where it came from. It wasn't too deep. The sessions are pretty much always the same. I record myself, you know, if I don't make the beat. That track and that whole album was produced by my friend Bled from Oklahoma City. But all of the sessions are the same. I write by myself. I like to be in a room by myself and just really think things through.
That's awesome. You know, I mentioned in the intro that you could truly rhyme over anything, and that really came to mind when on the track Where You Been, because what was happening was that this phone kept on ringing and I kept on thinking it was my phone. And it was kind of driving me out of my mind for a minute. But then I was like, wait, he's rhyming over this. What was that decision in terms of like, I'm going to have this, not, you know, have this phone underneath me while I'm actually rhyming parts of the song?
That was something Blev put in the beat. That was something Blev did. You know, a lot of decisions, I think, when a lot of records, you know, all the stuff on there isn't intentional. Some of it's just kind of like really beautiful mistakes or even just like, you know, beautiful coincidences. And that's just an example of that. It wasn't like I decided to put a, you know, give me a ringtone over this beat, you know.
Yes.
It's just, you know, that was what he felt when he made the beat. He sent it, and then I rapped over it. When I'm writing, I'm not really hearing the majority of these instruments, you know. I'm hearing like I'm listening for my tone. I'm listening for my flows. I'm thinking about my cadences, my wordplay. You know, am I going to tell a story? You know, I'm not, to be honest, when I'm listening to beats as I'm writing, I'm not really listening to all the instruments in the beat.
Nice. I mean, I like that beautiful mistake because I think a lot of it is, you do talk to artists and they're like, no, like, you know, there's a sixth sense that we have sometimes when it's going on. It's like a perfect.
Nah, that's a fallacy. It's there's so much of it that you don't control. You know what I mean? You control it to a certain extent, but there is there's so much that is just like, oh, wow, that's what it is. All right, leave it. You know what I mean? You got hit records that don't even get fully mixed, So it's, nah.
I think what I really, really enjoyed about prepping for this particular interview with you is that you really, whoever's listening to your album really needs to take the time to even go to genius.com and actually look at the lyrics that you're spitting, because they're going to miss a lot if they don't. And I think one of my favorite moments on the album is one of my favorite verses on the album is from the record Momentum. And I'll try not to destroy too much, so I'll just say a few lines from it. But it starts with, "Not to mention we ran out of patience. I was praying daily for a pretty penny and a newer pension. When the rent is due, no, they don't do extensions. It's a difficult, delicate situation. I've been meditating, trying to elevate above it." And then I won't destroy the rest. But I ain't got nothing left to prove. I'm the definition of obsessed. It's all they can do with no assistance. What wasn't living, there was coexisting. If it wasn't for the fitting, it would stop the mission. They were back. I think there's kind of a great, powerful lyrics, but also very beautiful lyrics as well. Can you just kind of take me into kind of breaking down some of these lyrics for us and get a, and what do you want us to kind of walk away from this particular piece?
It's funny because this is the first album that I ever wrote the lyrics and had it sent in, and someone, you know, uploaded them to Genius, the website. Everything else, I've never written the lyrics out. It's, you know, it's people kind of transcribing it as they go, you know what I mean? So I've always just tried to, overall, I felt like people are going to come to their own conclusions. Mm-hmm. So I never wanted to put the lyrics out, you know what I mean? It's like you said, I feel like I make music where you have to come back to it and you have to really try to engulf it in a whole, you know what I mean? I'm not, so, you know, people don't really, you know, older lyrics past this album, no one really knows what I'm saying, because I never posted the lyrics. But that lyric is just, it is what it is. It's pretty self-explanatory. You know, it's like, just, I think the whole song, that song Momentum, is just me trying to figure out a way to continue to keep doing this, to make it, you know, to be honest, to make it profitable, you know, because it's a business and you have to eat. And it's just, you know, trying to find the will and the drive to continue to go, you know, when it doesn't look like things are going so well, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the business, is there stuff that has kind of surprised you in terms of how the business of the music business works, or stuff that, or have you think you've been able to prepare yourself enough to, you know, not get quote unquote screwed over by, you know, any record industry or execs?
I think the information's out there for everyone. You know what I mean? If you're thirsty to you know, make a bunch of money and do this and do that, if your goal is to be famous, or if your goal is to be rich, then you can end up in some weird situations. You know what I mean? You can be kind of blinded by your ambition. But for the most part, now, you know, all of this stuff is common knowledge. You know, you can go on the internet and see what kind of deals people are getting. You know, you can go on the internet and see what the splits are for streams and all that. The internet has really made it all pretty much self-explanatory. And if you have any kind of common sense, you know, you can kind of go on there. You can just look on the internet and see, mm-hmm. You know.
It's true. On the track God, you spit, "I overcame every obstacle, told him it wasn't a mountain I couldn't climb." What for you so far, what has been kind of the biggest obstacle to overcome, just as an artist?
Just my own, that's a good question. I would just say my own mind, you know. I record all this stuff by myself, so I'm in here alone a lot of the time. So it's just overcoming that the negative thoughts, the negativity that just we all have in our mind, you know, that little bit of doubt that we all feel. I think that's the biggest thing. I'm not really worried about outside influences or other people's opinions on what I do. It's just mainly myself.
So you mentioned you do record it on your own. So who do you have a sounding board that you go to, or how do you know this album was done?
I know it by the time I'm done writing it, you know. And I've always been, I look up to like Wayne, and you know, Wayne when he was putting out all that stuff. I like Gucci Mane when he was putting out everything. I like the way Tupac had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of records by the time he died. You know, I always like that. So for the most part, whenever I get something I like, I'm going to spend, you know, as much time as I can to perfect it, and I'm going to put it out. You know, I'm not big on holding on to stuff. I don't think that art that's the point of art.
Nice. The final track of the album is Building, and the word you leave us with is Cold Blood and I Ain't Got No Feelings. Hard to tell the motherfuckers I'm working, grinding, stacking, better yet building. What do you want the listener to kind of take away from this track, and then also why leave us with Building as the final track?
I felt like it was a perfect end to the album, where it's just continue. It's me talking about, you know, I'm still working, I'm still at it, you know, there's still progress being made. I think a lot of times when you have artists that put out a bunch of music, people, and you know, you put out a bunch of music and then, you know, maybe people had expectations that you would get to, you know, a certain level. Well, you know, it doesn't always work out like that, but that doesn't mean that artist is falling off. That doesn't mean that artist has lost a step, you know, and that's kind of what that song represents. It's like, you know, I may not be where, you know, you thought I would be years ago when you first heard, you know, a song where I was rapping a million miles an hour, but, you know, there's still building going on. There's still a process going on. There's still progress being made every day.
That's my final question, Con. I appreciate your time on this. Is there a lyric out there that you've written, or even it could be for this album, that kind of has you saying, like, kind of like your, oh shit, I can't believe I wrote that lyric moment, you know, like, damn, I'm good?
I have that when I listen back to, you know, like anything I record, to be honest. You know, it's not, I don't listen to the old stuff. So once it's out, I don't go back to it. I don't listen to it. It's kind of, you know, it's out there now. It's like, that's a piece of me that's, you know, I'm done. Yeah, I'm done with that now. In terms of like it's just new stuff. You know, I constantly surprise myself. You know, I'm producing a lot of albums for myself now. And that in itself is very surprising. I'm recording myself in that. Because I didn't start that way. You know, I just started writing over, you know, YouTube beats and older beats. So the fact that I'm producing my stuff now, recording it, putting it out, you know, I have a whole studio. That's surprising, and that's motivating enough for me.
Sure. Does that actually change your approach to producing your stuff and recording it? Does it also change your approach to writing as well?
Oh, it definitely has. It definitely has. I'm not as into, it's not, you know, a slight against anyone else, but I definitely have, you know, the few people that I enjoy working with that, you know, they send me stuff. My friend Blev, perfect example of someone that sends me something and I'm always into it. I always want to rap over it. But for the most part, no, I don't even, you know, I don't like going to studio sessions. I like, you know, I like making the beat myself. I like making the idea myself. I'm kind of tapped into that world now of just being involved in every aspect of the song as opposed to just the raps.
New album is Long Time No See. The artist is Con. Incredible artist, incredible album. Con, thank you so much for being on Library Rap, the Hip Hop Interviews with Tim Monaco. I greatly appreciate your time.
Oh, man, I appreciate it as well, bro. Thank you so much, man. Same, I still remain. My middle finger high for you and whoever that came with you. Still smoking like I got four lungs. It'll take several lifetimes for you to do what I done. To make it out the bottom of the map, the place that I'm from. The crab in the barrel mentality gonna lead straight to your demise. Dying dead, except the lesson ain't no surprise. The rebel eye, and that's a focus.